abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, November 11th, 2013. Tom Woods here. Today we're going to talk foreign policy. I do want to note to you that tonight I'm going to be speaking at Miami University in Ohio. So I hope you can join me for that if you are in the area. That'll be at 7 p.m. at the auditorium at the business school. You can get details at tomwoods.com/events. And then don't forget November 18th, Clarion University, November 19th, Penn State, November 20th at lunchtime, St. Louis University School of Law, and in the afternoon, November 20th, Lindenwood University in St. Charles, Missouri. But let's turn our attention right now to Daniel McAdams. Daniel McAdams runs the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. He is the executive director there. He served as the Foreign Affairs, Civil Liberties, and Defense Policy Advisor to Congressman Ron Paul from 2001 until Dr. Paul retired at the end of 2012. So he really is sort of my go-to guy on foreign policy. I mean, certainly we'll have other people on, but my regular guy is going to be Daniel McAdams. You should check out the Ron Paul Institute at ronpaulinstitute.org. So, Daniel McAdams of the Ron Paul Institute, welcome once again to the show.
Thank you for having me back, Tom. It's great to speak with you again.
Well, you are my go-to guy on foreign policy. And I think with all this Obamacare stuff in the news, it's been pushing foreign policy out of the news. And I don't trust these people. I feel like they're always trying to get away with something behind our back. So we got to keep foreign policy on the front burner. And that's, of course, what you're doing over at the Ron Paul Institute. RonPaulInstitute.org is the indispensable website. Let's first talk about Iran, because there we've seen what seems to be a favorable development. There seems to be some progress being made in terms of talks, and yet no progress is ever enough to get U.S. congressmen and senators not to be pushing for sanctions all the same, right? So can you fill us in on what went on last week in Geneva?
Sure, yeah. Last Thursday, the P5 plus one talks took place. The next round of them took place in Geneva. And according to Iran's chief negotiator, they made some serious progress. Iran came initially to the first round with a pretty comprehensive package of proposals as to what it would take to improve relations, and they're pretty substantive. You know, on the Iranian side, it included the possibility of ratifying the additional protocols, is what they call them, which is an additional set of protocols to the to the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty, and that would allow for much more invasive inspections and those sorts of things, much more much deeper inspections of the Iranian nuclear sites. And also they offered to not enrich over 20% uranium and have much more transparency and this sort of thing. And in return for this, they were requesting some relief from sanctions. And the reports last week were that the second round of talks was quite successful thus far, and it's a good first step. But as you pointed out, Tom, the very same day, last Thursday, that this was announced, the Senate announced that it was going ahead and going to mark up a brand new sanctions bill against Iraq anyway, out of deference
against Iran.
To the president's, Iran yesterday. Out of deference to the president's negotiating, they said they'd wait until these talks were over. But this is through the Senate Banking Committee and Senator Tim Johnson. And just to show you that this is a bipartisan thing, he's a Democrat, obviously. The Senate's controlled by the Democrats. He and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid agreed to go ahead with new sanctions. So this really will tie the president's hand if the president is truly sincere about his, and I think there's no reason to doubt that he is sincere to move ahead and try to find a peaceful solution to this, 30-odd-year crisis with Iran. So I think the president has incredible roadblocks ahead of him for this, including his own chief negotiator, who has misrepresented not only the U.S. position, but also international law. And I'm talking about Wendy Sherman. She's Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs. And we had an article on our site, Tom, this past week from Hillary and Flint Leverett, who are two expert Iranian analysts, and they're also on the board of the Institute. We're so lucky to have them. But the Leverett's pointed out that she went before Congress and told a blatant lie, which is that Article 4 of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty says nothing about the right of signatory nations to enrich. And that's absolutely true. All it takes is someone to simply go to the NPT and read Article 4, which says, quote, "Nothing in this treaty shall be interpreted as affecting the inalienable right of all the parties to the treaty to develop, research, production, and use of nuclear energy for peaceful purposes without discrimination." So his own negotiators are putting forth this lie. So it really is wrong footing. If the president is sincere, it really is wrong footing his efforts. So really, this is one of the more exciting, I'd have to say, international negotiations we've seen in years. And it kind of puts you on the edge of your seat.
Well, I think because we hardly know what to make of it, because we never see negotiations. I mean, we really don't. Usually we have some belligerent U.S. demand that each time it's met, it grows more unreasonable and more belligerent until it can't possibly be met, and then invasion comes, right? It's the usual pattern. So I don't even remember seeing anything quite like this. Now, let me play devil's advocate, though. I mean, let me try to get into the mind of a neoconservative. And I'm going to try to get into the mind of a sincere neocon. I'm not talking about somebody who just wants to make money for the military-industrial complex or something. I'm talking about the average person who reads neocon newspaper columns. And that person may say, you can enter into negotiations in good faith with a lot of different types of people, but the Iranians are just so radical. And plus, they're sincere Muslims. And the fact is that Islam's a violent religion, and it teaches that you can lie to your enemies and you can deceive them if it benefits you. And so that's, of course, what they're going to do to us. And we're going to be naive, left-wing progressives, go along with the Iranians. Then before you know it, they're going to wipe us all out with their secretly developed nuclear weapons. I think that's what the typical neocon thinks.
Sure, but and you're absolutely right. And unfortunately, the media, that is the dominant position that the media takes. And you're viewed as a weakling if you don't believe it. But with any crime, you need to see evidence. You know, I hate to say this, and actually I'll probably sound like a progressive, which I'm not really, but a lot of it does go back to racial stereotypes, racial prejudice, religious discrimination. And really going back to Wendy Sherman, I hate to pick on the lady, but here's what she said about the Iranians last month. Quote, "We know that deception is part of their DNA." You know, can you imagine saying that about any other ethnic group, religious group? You'd be drummed out of your position. You'd be drummed out of polite society. So they can get away with these things. The truth is, the Islamic Republic of Iran does hold social values that for most of us we find unusual. And we probably wouldn't want to ascribe to them. However, that's the way the world is, isn't it, Tom?
Well, I happen to think, Daniel, that it would be fantastic. I would be cheering if somebody anywhere in the world said of the American ruling class that deception is part of their DNA, because that's the only way I can account for it. Like, even if I ask Barack Obama what his favorite color is, I think he'd lie to me, even though he stands to gain nothing from that lie. They can't help themselves.
Absolutely. But the ruling class is really different than talking about a race of people.
Of course, right, right, right.
I think that gets a little bit ugly, if you ask me. I don't like that sort of generalization. I think it's very, very ugly.
And the thing is that I think anybody in the world who said what I'm proposing ought to be said to our ruling class would actually single out. They would actually exempt the American public. They say the American people are probably more or less decent, and even the ones who are belligerent, well, half the time, they're really just uninformed. And I don't mean they're not culpably uninformed. Like, they really need to know more than they do. But most of them just are, they're just reading, you know, the newspaper, and they don't realize, because they're busy people, that you can't trust the newspapers in the U.S. I wish more people understood that, but they really don't. So you have, it's interesting to hear, and it warms my heart to hear that you are following what's going on with the Iranian situation with great interest and sympathy, and it sounds like maybe something good could conceivably come of it. And then meanwhile, we have in the U.S. people who just can't take yes for an answer. Is there any conceivable type of offer the Iranians could make that would so corner the American neocons that it would just be impossible for them to continue in belligerence?
Well, the only thing that the neocons here would accept would be a complete cessation of enrichment of uranium. And that is such an affront to the sovereignty. To, you know, Iran sort of, in a way, played the high road. They signed the NPT. We know that you know, for example, Israel is a nuclear power. They refused to sign the NPT. So Iran is sort of playing by international rules. It signed it. It is. And this is what most Americans don't understand. It has never been found in violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It's never been found in violation. They signed it. They're playing by the rules. And the other side of those rules require you to have the ability to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes. No one has ever proven, after years and years of inspections, no one has ever proven that they have diverted this this material for weapons purposes. And you look at... You talk about transparency, and maybe they have not had enough transparency. Well, what about the transparency, if you want to look at it from another perspective? Look at the transparency of the U.S. military establishment. The U.S. government over the past, 10 or 15 years, how many aggressive wars have they entered into? Would they open themselves up to these sorts of inspections to have people look into their intentions and their capabilities? And if you remember, Tom, this is exactly what happened in the run-up to Iraq. The inspectors were in there, they were looking, they were finding nothing, and that still wasn't good enough to prevent an attack. So a long answer to your short question, short of absolutely giving up their sovereignty, which they're not about to do, nor would any country with its head on straight would give up its sovereignty. Short of that, there's nothing they could do to satisfy the neocons. Just like short of Saddam Hussein allowing leaving within 48 hours, I guess is what it said. That's the only way he could have avoided. Milosevic in Yugoslavia, if you remember, we go back a few years ago, he had to allow his country to be completely occupied by NATO troops or they'd bomb. So you give you an offer that there's no way you can accept or will bomb. And thankfully, we haven't got to the or will bomb part. But the senators and congressmen are certainly pushing in that direction.
Now, I know that, Daniel, people like you and I and Ron Paul, a lot of times we'll kind of say there's no real difference between the parties. There's no real difference between the presidential candidates. And to a certain extent, there's a lot of truth to that. But, you know, they do vary in style. They do vary in emphasis. And I wonder, given the fact that the administration more or less gave up on bombing Syria, whereas you know John McCain would have bombed Syria no matter – I mean, the less evidence there was, the more he would have wanted to bomb Syria. So and then, you know, Iran – Obama's had all the opportunity in the world to bomb Iran if he really wanted to do it. And it's true that he's used the drones and he's been belligerent in his own way. But do you think that maybe it could really be the case that his heart is just not in this, that he genuinely doesn't want to be involved in a war?
It's a kind of, I guess, a criminology or something to try to decipher what's in his heart. But I've thought that myself many times, and I've entertained the fantasy that it is these horrible, I hate to say it, these horrible, extraordinarily aggressive women in his cabinet that are pushing him toward this. And maybe I should include Carrie in that as well, just to make it make it both genders. But, you know, you have Susan Rice, you have Samantha Power, and you're right, there are some subtle differences between parties, and people like Rice and Power will push bombing for humanitarian reasons, which really, I mean, if you had to choose, I find that almost more disgusting than someone like McCain, you know, who just acknowledges, look, I just want to take everyone out, you know?
Right.
You know, it almost seems more vulgar to put a humanitarian gloss over something so horrible and destructive as bombing a country.
All right, let's shift gears now. I want to talk about what's been going on in Syria, because I think once it kind of dropped off people's radar once it became clear that it was unlikely that any bombing would take place by the U.S., so now there's no interest in it. But now apparently our friends the Saudi Arabians are now funding fighters to overthrow Assad, which is so interesting. Like the idea of overthrowing Assad would lead to, would lead to like the Hillary Clintons of the Middle East taking over everywhere. I don't think that's what the Saudis would be interested in funding. So what really is going on here?
Well, it's yet another round. You know, the Saudis have already spent hundreds of millions of dollars bankrolling the rebels in Syria. And I would never call them Syrian rebels because certainly the majority of them are not Syrian. They're foreign jihadists who have gone into Syria. They've come from Yemen. They've come from Saudi Arabia. They've come from Germany and the UK, and they've come from America to a degree. So these are foreign fighters who view this as their next jihad to overthrow a secular leader. The Saudis have no military, despite spending billions and billions to keep the American military-industrial complex happy. So all they can do is write the checks. And so they're writing yet another round of checks to send an army of, several thousand, say four up until 50,000 people, to go into Syria and again attempt to overthrow the Assad government, which, you know, we have no affection for other than the fact that it is a sovereign government that's being overthrown from without. But, you know, if we rewind the tape a little bit, this is also something that no one ever talks about. This whole Syria thing was supposedly the next chapter in the Arab Spring, you know, where the democratic feeling was in the streets and the Syrians themselves were rising up to demand more freedom against the dictator. And that narrative has been lost in several other sub-narratives because it's become embarrassing. Because these aren't Syrians rising up. These are international jihadists going in to overthrow a secular government in favor of something that would be anathema to those who are being forced to pay for it, for example, here in the U.S. So we sort of toss that narrative aside that this is a popular uprising. And now it's simply we've got to overthrow this guy no matter what. So it's disturbing that the Saudis are funding it. And, you know, last Wednesday, I believe it was, these wonderful Syrian rebels, not Syrian rebels, but international insurgents, bombed the embassy of the Vatican in Damascus. And this is yet just one in a string of embassies that they're bombing. They bombed the Russian embassy. They bombed the Chinese embassy. They bombed the Iraqi embassy. Every government that is not getting behind their fight against Assad somehow finds a mortar lobbed in its neighborhood. So this I think this says a lot about what kinds of people we're dealing with.
All right, I want to switch gears yet again, just because there's just so much to talk about, and I have such a short attention span sometimes. I want to make sure we get everything in, because in particular, there's this speech. Now, I didn't have a chance to watch it. I just read your write-up about it, that Congressman Walter Jones gave about a week and a half ago. Now, Congressman Walter Jones, for those of you who don't know, he's a congressman from, is he North Carolina?
North Carolina, exactly.
Yeah. Now, this is the guy who he came up with the term freedom fries. He was very gung-ho about the Iraq War. And then, even though it practically guaranteed him nothing but grief, he changed his mind on the war and changed his mind on war in general, practically, and now is a board member of the Ron Paul Institute. And now he gave a speech in which he basically called for ending U.S. military action in and ending the flow of U.S. tax money to Afghanistan. And what types of arguments is he putting forth? I mean, he comes from a district that is very, very heavily military. So he has to bear that in mind in the way he frames his argument. What's he saying? How's he making this appeal?
Well, the other thing about Congressman Jones, who's just one of the real gems in Congress, is that he took a lot of heat from his fellow congressmen when he did decide to turn on Iraq. And the reason he did it is he kept writing letters to the families of soldiers that were killed, and it caused him to pause and think about the idiocy of the war. And he dug further and further into it because he got angry, and he discovered that he had been lied to by Condi Rice and all the other criminals in the Bush administration. And it made him so angry that he really, if you talk to him in person, he's animated by this anger over having been lied to and realizing how many people were killed because of the vote of so many of them to go into Iraq. So in some ways, it's sort of a Greek tragedy or something. You know, he's trying to make up for a mistake that he feels he's made. And I think the rest of us would say he's more than made up for it, for all of the number of speeches that he's done on the floor and how much he has made it okay for conservatives. He himself is a very conservative Christian, as you point out, coming from a conservative district. I think his great achievement is that he has made it okay for conservatives to question war. He and another member of the Ron Paul advisory board, Congressman John Duncan from Tennessee, two very conservatives who've spoken out against the war as conservatives. And as far as what Walter Jones said recently on the floor, very, very powerful. And he said, it's time for Congress to face the fact that we have our own problems in the U.S., sending over $600 billion to Afghanistan to build roads, schools, and utility plants so the Taliban can blow them up makes no sense. And he said, it's also time for little girls like these two, and he was holding up a picture of two young girls, to have their daddies at home and not to have their daddies in a coffin. It's a very, very moving speech on his part. And, you know, God bless him.
Look, I happen to love this type of populist rhetoric. I love this sort of thing where he's basically saying that even though we've been taught to cheer for this stuff and not ask questions about it, the fact is that we've all suffered from it. It has hurt us. It has made it harder for us to solve our own problems. It hasn't done a whole heck of a lot of good for people overseas either. It's hard to see who the winners really are here, but the losers are everybody who has mindlessly cheered on the war machine. And how refreshing that is. I think it would be fun if somebody like him or if Congressman Duncan had presidential aspirations, because I'd love to hear rip-roaring speeches from people like this and not mealy-mouthed stuff about, no, we can't afford this, maybe we got to rethink it, but people who are just going to call a spade on this stuff.
Sure, and you know what he gets for it? He gets some creep neocon who's trying to challenge him now in the Republican primary next time. So the Republican Party has had him in their sights for a long time, and I don't think there's anyone who can challenge him. But you never know. They can put a lot into it. So it shows where they are. The Republican Party has no intention of changing their views on the warfare machine.
So tell me what the Ron Paul Institute is up to these days. What sorts of stories are you guys tracking?
Well, what we try to do is we try to take a look at the news. We try to look at things, you know, myself and some colleagues that work with me have a combined total of, you know, 2+ decades working for Ron Paul. So we try to look at things through his eyes. We collaborate with him on a regular basis. He's very much a part of it. He's our founder and chairman. And we want to present the news and the events of the day from a deeper and analytical perspective. We want to not be your standard think tank where you have a bunch of PhDs, no offense, sitting in a room talking to each other. But like you do, Tom, you have an amazing ability to explain very complex things in very simple, readable ways. I always remember, I think you did a piece in the American Conservative a while ago explaining the whole concept of nullification, and I'm not an expert in these things, and I remember reading it thinking, I finally get it. You know?
Oh, well, thanks.
So that's our intention, is we want to speak to people who are uncomfortable with what they're hearing in the media, and we want to show them that there are alternatives. There are people like the Leverets out there who are very responsible professors, intellectuals, who are nevertheless challenging the predominant paradigm. We also, to be honest, want to have a little bit of fun, too. So we do poke fun at people like McCain and Lindsey Graham. We have a regular column called Neocon Watch, where we keep our eyes on the stuff these guys are writing, and we just put it back in their face. So it's a little cheeky, too. We don't want to be too somber and serious. And we also want to tell some good news stories. We're not just doing foreign policy. We're also doing civil liberties quite a bit. And so we're covering things like food freedom, farm freedom. And there are some good news stories there. We're covering the drug war. And so we're doing quite a bit. And we've been building up the website. And next thing, we're going to be starting some programs now. We've had about 6 months to get the website running. We've got an amazing response from readers. And we're so happy to really build up the readership. So our next move is to start with some projects we have in mind, including a summer school next summer for university students, and a kind of a modified internship program. So we got plenty of stuff on the horizon.
Are you guys a 501c3?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we are a project of Congressman Paul's 501c3 called the Free Foundation, which he founded in the 70s. So we are a completely, entirely under Dr. Paul's legal umbrella.
Okay.
And so we are definitely part of the of his personal 501c3.
Well, especially as we get to the end of the year and people are wondering about gifts they can give, and you're looking for a 501c3, I can hardly think of one that's more worthy than the Ron Paul Institute because of what you have done and what you have the potential to do. When I had Congressman Paul on this program a couple weeks ago, I asked him, has there ever been a non-interventionist organization in American history, as far as you know? And he couldn't think of one. So you really are treading on virgin ground here. I mean, it's tremendous what you guys are doing, and I'm going to continue to pick your brain on a regular basis once or twice a month to keep an eye on what they're doing overseas. So Daniel McAdams, best of luck, and I hope everybody visits you at ronpaulinstitute.org.
Thank you so much, Tom.
All right, that was Daniel McAdams of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. ronpaulinstitute.org, once again, is the website. Let me give you guys a sneak peek at what we're going to be covering later this week. It's going to be an economics week, having covered foreign policy today. We're going to do economics this week. There are other topics in the world other than economics, but that's just the way it worked out. Tomorrow, I'm going to do the show on my own, and I'm going to talk about the subject of falling prices and why it's actually not a bad thing for prices to be falling, contrary to what we read last week in Business Insider. I shudder even to say that. Then, let's see, what we're going to do on Wednesday, we're going to be joined by our favorite economist, Bob Murphy. Robert P. Murphy will join us, and instead of taking general questions, we're going to devote the whole session to what's called modern monetary theory. Don't let that scare you off. You can understand this. It's just wrong, but you can understand it. MMT is how it's sometimes referred to for short. Modern monetary theory will be the subject on Wednesday. I've had many requests for this. We need a conversation about modern monetary theory, and we're going to have Bob Murphy on to explain it to us and see what the shortcomings are. Then later in the week, we're going to talk to David Friedman, son of Milton Friedman, and an important scholar in his own right. And I'm going to pelt David Friedman with man-on-the-street questions. David Friedman is an anarcho-capitalist, so his view is that the market can provide everything. It's not that, well, the market can do most things, but Nancy Pelosi is necessary for three or four things. No. If the market is what we say it is, then it can produce all these things. And I'm going to ask him the sorts of questions that a guy on the street would have, and we'll see what he can come up with. So that'll be Thursday. And then finally, on Friday, George Reisman will join us. George Reisman is a great economist, a guy I like very much, whose work I have benefited from quite a bit and which I have cited quite a bit in my own writing. If you look at his major treatise called Capitalism, it is like a phone book. The thing is gigantic. You would be injured if you dropped it on your foot. Seriously, you would be injured. You cannot believe how gigantic this book is. But George Reisman is going to join us for Our Robots Going to Take All Our Jobs Away. I've been reading this quite a bit lately, and I saw a TED speech on this somebody sent me. Yeah, it's true. We're going to have abundance, but robots are going to have all our jobs. George Reisman's going to come on and talk about that and other myths about the future and about capitalism. So quite a week ahead of us. And don't forget, I have a dwindling supply. I'm not kidding here. I have a dwindling supply of copies of Nullification. If you want a free, signed, personalized copy, you got to hurry up and get it. because once I get rid of this box, I ain't never giving nullification away ever again. You're going to have to just buy it. You have to just suck it up and buy it after this. But if you want your free copy, join libertyclassroom.com this week and drop me a note on the contact page saying, hey, Woods, I just joined your site, libertyclassroom.com. Here's my address. Where's my book? And I'll send it right out to you. All right, everybody, I'm talking to you solo tomorrow. Hope you'll join me. See you then.
The Tom Woods Show.